regardless of what is on my list, regardless of what I'm manifesting, the entire time I'm manifesting self-worth and deservingness. It is listening to my intuition. It's listening to the messages I'm receiving and having a little bit of trust and letting go when it's time for that too.
From To Be Magnetic, this is the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As the leading destination for neural manifestation, we dispel the woo-woo in order to help you create real, tangible results based on neuroplasticity, psychology, epigenetics, and energetics. Our goal is to normalize the practice of manifestation and empower you to get into the driver's seat of your life in order to manifest the experiences, relationships, and things that most align with your authenticity. Part of our manifestation process entails expanding past your limiting subconscious beliefs. Therefore, by tuning into this podcast with interviews from experts, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, scientists, and those with neural manifestation success stories, you're starting the process of expanding your subconscious in order to see to believe that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, the process begins.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Expanded Podcast. Jessica here. So it's beginning to be that time of year again when the holidays are approaching us. We're starting to think about New Year's intentions, what we want to call in for the next year, how we want to wrap up this year. And it's actually such a beautiful and powerful time for manifestations. Our triggers are heightened. We're starting to take inventory of what worked this past year and what didn't. And we start to look forward to a version of ourselves we hope to be in the new year. The really exciting part is we don't need to wait until January to start that. We can start it right now. So we have an incredible challenge that we're doing the month of December all the way through January to run you through into the new year called the Manifestation Challenge. We did the Magnetism Challenge last year and had so much success. 91% of the people that participated were able to manifest something on the other side of the challenge. 91%. So that means if you join the challenge with us, there is a very high probability that your manifestation will connect with you in the new year. This challenge is a bit more robust from last year, really actionable and accountable, and we're really trying to handhold you through it. So if you guys have not work through the manifestation process, you're in a slump with your manifestations, things aren't quite coming through, you really want to commit, but you're unable to find the time or keep yourself accountable to continue on with the work, or you're brand new and you've been thinking about doing this for a long time but weren't sure when, now's the time to join. When you join the pathway, you can participate in the Manifestation Challenge. We're going to walk you through how to manifest, all of the daily reprogramming, taking inventory over this past year, seeing what worked for us, what didn't, and then start to call in the new version of self we want to connect with on the other side for 2022. You'll craft your list with us, get us all set, ready to go, and even get some support during the holidays because I know it can be really triggering. And the really exciting part is this year we have 4 live calls. So we have 2 calls with Lacey and I and 2 calls with the coaches to really answer your questions, get clarity on what you're calling in, and help you step by step through this process. This is a $225 value that we're offering completely free if you are in the pathway with us. So this is like full access. You get to ask questions directly. We get to handhold you through the process. And we found that the reason these challenges are so effective is because we're putting this intention to do it together. We have a 6-week calendar. It's totally feasible to do through the holidays. We have some off days and down days, and it's really going to be the most supportive thing to help connect with the new version of you you want to see in the next year. So start calling in your manifestations with us. Join us in the Manifestation Challenge. It's starting December 1st. And if you are not in the pathway yet, we are going to have a limited time sale. So check the show notes for a link to our sale code to get into the pathway for one of our lowest rates of the year. That again is for new members and can't be applied retroactively. So make sure to look out for new insights for the Manifestation Challenge. It will all be released live on December 1st within the pathway membership. And we are so excited to connect with you. It's going to be an incredible year. Okay, so today we have another incredible process guest. We have Shani Silver. Shani is someone who has been with us for over 4 years, which is so exciting. It's always fun to see how the work has resonated and evolved with every part of the community that has grown with us over time. Shani has gone on to manifest so much. Most of all, and importantly to her, the first thing she wrote on her list was publishing a book, which came out just this fall. And since the time that we recorded, because it was just about to launch, her book has launched and it hit number one in the self-esteem and self-help section on Amazon Books, which is so exciting. And she's already made back one third of her initial investment by self-publishing. I mean, that was just in a couple of weeks after launch. So not only has she manifested this incredible book deal, self-worth, her dream home in New Orleans down to a T, but she's even manifested since we recorded this episode. And I think it's kind of cool seeing when process guests come on. And from the time we recorded, you know, they're sort of jumping off a cliff, being vulnerable, outing their shadow, sharing so much of their story from the time that they record the episode to the time it even airs or a few months after that. They wind up manifesting a lot in between then because they're up-leveling and allowing themselves to be seen in such a big way. So I know you're going to get so much out of this episode. And Shani really gives inspiration and creates such a beautiful narrative around enjoying the single chapters and the singledom of your life when you're in those phases. So anyone calling in a partner or navigating through being single and what that means and how to define it and how to be in that chapter of your life, she has some incredible tips and wisdom of how to celebrate that part of yourself. So I know you guys are going to love this episode. And without further ado, here is Shani Silver. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
It's so funny because I forget if a member recommended you or you were in the sort of vortex of a potential process episode before you had submitted. It feels like on our end a long time in the works because we're like, she would be so cool for a process.
Thank you so much. That's so nice to hear. I actually, when you guys first started doing these, I was like, should I submit? And I knew that it wasn't time. And I just sort of had that feeling like, it's not time yet. Like, this isn't right. Like, I had manifested many things, big and small. I've been doing this for, I think I just signed up for my fourth year with you guys. So I've been doing it a while. But I just knew it like wasn't quite time to submit to this because I wanted to wait for this particular manifestation because it's the first one I ever wrote on any list ever. And it's just the biggest deal to me. So I wanted to wait for this to be real before I reached out to you guys.
It was the perfect timing. So kick us off with your sun, moon, and rising. Let's get some astrology going.
Sure. I am a Cancer sun, Capricorn rising, and Scorpio moon. And I am a manifesting generator with a 6-2 profile.
We are so similar. We're like an inverse. I'm Capricorn sun, Cancer rising, Scorpio moon.
No way.
Yeah, that's so cool. So how do you feel like you resonate to your astrology?
I think once I actually explored my full chart, things just got easier. After I sort of understood more about my tendencies and strategies, I could stop feeling like I was always wrong and recognize that that always wrong feeling was just me fighting against who I actually am and trying to fit into a society, their vision of what a good or cool or successful or likable person was. And so when I stopped caring about the exterior and started really digging into my chart and understanding myself a bit more, and then layering on human design with that, the more I actually let go and leaned into who I actually am, everything started to flow a lot easier and I could take much deeper breaths and just sort of be comfortable in being myself.
I love that. I think that's so cool with, you know, all the systems, whether it's human design or astrology or whatnot, finding spaces where you can validate your own experience and your unique perspective is what I think is so cool about all of that stuff. And finding, wow, I feel seen in this bucket or this astrology profile or whatever it is, it's a really cool way to accept all the different parts of ourselves.
I love it. I like those sides of it that I really lean into and sort of, I used to think that I had to correct, like course correct who I am. Like it was weird to be who I am. Now I'm like, it's fine that I have Halloween decorations out all year. I'm a Scorpio moon. Leave me alone. Like that's just sort of what I'm going to do.
Yes. I love that. It's so funny too with the Capricorn and Cancer, and I'm curious how it interacts for you, but having Capricorn in my chart, I was like ingrained in me that Capricorn was strict and regimented and a bit cold and all of these things, which I definitely have that side, but I'm also very emotional. Like I cry at movies all the time, and that maybe that's a Scorpio moon too, but definitely my Cancer rising. Once I realized that aspect was in my charts, I'm like, oh, I am a Capricorn that does cry all the time. Okay, this makes perfect sense.
I love my rising sign. I love being a Capricorn rising. I'm an absolute professional beast and I always have been. And it's the one area of life where I've just always felt the sense of confidence and capability. And I love that side of myself. Sometimes I read the Capricorn side of forecasts first because I'm kind of more curious about that.
So interesting. So tell us a little bit about your background and upbringing and how it led to who you are today.
I mean, if that's not a massive question, I think...
Just a light one to start
off. Sure, yeah, no big deal. The relevant parts are I was raised in Fort Worth, Texas, in a conservative Jewish family, and I was also raised by a single mother. How it contributed to who I am is a very, very layered... I mean, it's its whole own podcast, much less episode, but the messages that I received were in a way that I was always odd and always wrong. And I just got like a very clear understanding from a very young age that I was different from other people and I was different in a bad way. I had divorced parents. And when I was very young, I noticed that other children didn't have that. Of course, that changed as I got older and I started making more and more friends who came from similar backgrounds. And that made me feel a bit less alone in that capacity. But I think it had more to do with, I mean, certainly one of the things I visited in DIs 1,000 times, I went to a private Jewish Hebrew school for elementary until fifth grade. And after fifth grade, the school had to shut down because there were not enough children in Fort Worth to fill it. So then I had to go to a public middle school in Texas starting in sixth grade. And I was just thrown in the door. And no one told me this is how school works in a public school. No one told me about any of the differences between what I knew and what I was walking into. I went from a fifth grade class of 4 students total to a sixth grade class of hundreds. And we were broken up into, you know, little sections. And it was just all very shocking and abrasive. And on top of being in a completely new environment, I was the Jewish girl. And I was the only one there in a school with hundreds and hundreds of Southern Baptist students. I was the only Jewish one. And that was made very clear to me that that was a bad and weird thing right from the start. Of course, it isn't. But when you're a child, it can feel like there's a lot of shame being packed onto you. The layers of shame for most kids, like they're very unique to everyone's individual upbringing. But my shame layers were one on top of the other. And my name was always a huge source of shame because no one can say Shani. When you read it on a page, it's Shani or Shani or Shana or Shanai, but it's anything other than Shani. And so I had so much shame, like on the first day of school when you go to 8 new classes in a row and your name is mispronounced in front of the whole room and it's the only one that happens to. And every time you have a substitute teacher, it's a whole other layer of that. But I've done a lot of TBM work actually on the shame around my name. And now it's very different, I'll say.
You have a beautiful name, by the way.
Thank you so much.
I think a lot of people can definitely relate to the name piece specifically. I know even, you know, some team members have had that block as well. And I think it's really isolating. I know at least my memory of being in classrooms, you know, when the teachers called on you, like, I did not want to be seen by the teachers. Like, my preferred state was just observing, but not interacting as a child. Like, I needed to observe the room and feel safe, and then maybe I could interact. And so the idea of having to, oh God, the teacher's going to get my name wrong. Okay, what are they going to say this time? Then I have to correct them. How is that going to go down? You're sort of preparing for this imminent moment of this uncomfortable feeling with a superior in the moment. And so I can imagine that must be really challenging. And then also it's your name. It's what you identify with, you know, so that you want to have it with pride and have people excited to state it as well. So I think that one can be an interesting block. How did you go about giving that inner child you the celebration for your name?
Well, I've done there's a lot of things that I've done. I think one of my favorites is that it sounds weird to say it out loud, but I mean, what doesn't? I kind of built a house in my subconscious for my inner child. And that's sort of where she lives. And it's all of the things that, you know how we're all obsessed with the exterior of the Practical Magic house?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's the outside. And then the inside gets to be all of these things that I love. There's this massive glass house component to it. There is the kitchen from the movie Moonstruck, because for some reason I'm obsessed with that room. There's just like all these different rooms, but that's where my inner child lives and stays. And I sort of visit her in DIs. And Shadow lives there too, and that's where my magnetic self hangs out. And it's just kind of the place where the four of us sort of chill and do work together. And so I think having a space that is entirely hers and sort of defined, like her bathtub is gigantic and all of the bubbles are strawberry scented, because that was one of my favorite things when I was a kid. And so it's just kind of a place where it's customized to her and she fits everywhere and everything fits her, as opposed to the childhood I had, which felt like I never fit anywhere. This fits her. And I think that's one of the kindest things I've done for my inner child.
I love that. And especially on, you know, a lot of people have questions on how to create their visualizations, how to get a healing, all of those things. And that's such a great, clear example of how to customize this work for yourself. It's interesting when you go to the same places so many times in the DIs, you almost feel like they're real, like they are real. You know, you go there so often and you're creating these memories in these places that don't necessarily exist, but in your mind, they're so comforting and soothing and you refer to them so often that they become a neural pathway that feels like safety and feels like home, which is really awesome.
Absolutely. It feels really fun too, because everything that you might not be able to have in real life, like I can't have an English garden in my backyard, but I can there. So whatever you want can sort of exist.
So cool. So you started this work almost four years ago. Your first thing on your list was publishing a book. Tell us a little bit about your initial experience with GBM, what you initially wrote on your manifestation list, and some of the things that have come through between initially putting that book publishing on there to today.
Oh my goodness. That question's big too. And I actually started keeping a spreadsheet of everything a couple years ago because I was losing track of it all in my mind. It's like, I can't remember every synchronicity. I can't remember every little manifestation that comes through. And so I just started keeping a list so I can keep track and refer to it later. I started this work in January of 2019, January 23rd, 2019. I found this work because a reader of mine sent me an email and she said, I think you would really enjoy To Be Magnetic. And back then I was a very closed person, a very doubting and skeptical person. I was just like a walking eye roll. You just could not get to me. I shut my laptop and I walked away. And then 3 days later, now I know it was a ping, but back then I didn't. And I just sort of felt like I needed to go back to that email. I opened that email again and I went over to the website. And at the time, Lacey had all these videos. They were immediately making sense to me. And by the time I had finished watching my first video, I had already signed up for a year of the pathway, because it was just sort of meeting me at the perfect time when I wasn't really seeing, I knew I wasn't happy in the present. But what was scarier was when I was looking at my own future, I wasn't happy with that either. And that was starting to really, really scare me. And it had never scared me before. So this came along at exactly the right time. So I started on the 23rd of January in 2019. And then 3 days later, I deleted my dating apps. And it was the first time in 10 years that I had deleted my dating apps and never once re-downloaded or even wanted to. And it was because that early work, one of the like strongest messages that came through to me in the beginning was, what in your life isn't serving you? And if it's not serving you, why is it there? It was the first time that anybody had sort of told me, you are allowed to say no. And not only are you allowed to say no, saying no for you is actually going to be really productive. And it's really going to build up a lot of trust. And it's going to be absolutely vital to your manifestation process and just vital to your self-worth and overall well-being. So that was sort of the first taste I had of saying no to something that wasn't serving me, or saying no to something that wasn't a hell yes. That one action literally gave birth to the entire career that I have right now. So that was just the start. And then my list tended to vary based on like what I needed in the moment. I moved apartments once in Brooklyn, and then I moved this year during 2021. I actually did a cross-country move to New Orleans. And I think probably the biggest manifestation that has come through before this book was definitely this house that I'm in right now in New Orleans. I am a non-specific manifester, and I like that for me because I've always been a pretty trusting person with this work because I've seen so much good come of that trust. So I love being a non-specific manifester. And this house was one of the very first times that I made an incredibly specific list with lots of different items on it. And I really just sort of let myself make a list without reservations, like let myself feel deserving and not hold back and want less than I actually want, like I was always sort of groomed to do. And I'm sitting in the house that I wrote down on a list.
What sort of things did you have on the list?
I wanted a two-bedroom, two-bath house. First of all, I wanted a house. I did not want an apartment. I had been in apartments, oh God, for like 15 years or something. I wanted a house with a mailbox and a backyard. And I wanted one of these sort of floor-to-ceiling rectangular windows that some of the New Orleans houses have. They're wonderful. I have that. I have white walls. I have a washer-dryer. I have a dishwasher. Things that sounded in my head so basic, but had been so unachievable to me for so long in Brooklyn. And just in previous iterations of myself as well, I never thought I deserved a house that really felt like home, that really felt like a place I could be proud of, could have people over. And a big part of that obviously was leaving New York and moving to New Orleans, where housing is much more affordable. But it was also just me getting to a place where I understood what I deserved, and I wasn't afraid to ask for that. So, I mean, I need to like go back to this list, but there were so many items on it. I didn't want old appliances. I didn't want not updated brown cabinet doors. I wanted a new kitchen. I wanted space for a dining table. It was just really amazing. And then the thing to point out about this house is that I also manifested better than my list because it's a shotgun house, which means it's like a duplex. It's split in half. And my shotgun mate that lives on the other side of this house is amazing. We get along so well. I have never in my life had even a roommate that I've gotten along with, and I've never known my neighbor's names ever. And now she and I like hang out on the front porch on the weekends, and it's great. I also have just incredible neighbors throughout the block. It's just a wonderful spot that I landed in. It's the first time I manifested specifically, but still let other things come through that were better than what I had imagined.
So I want to clear up too for other people, the specific versus non-specific. So for non-specific, a list would typically look like, I want a house that feels XYZ, or how would you list things out for non-specific?
For non-specific manifestations, it's kind of, there's obviously an item that I want to manifest, something, an achievement, a goal, something like that. There is definitely an item on the list, but then the specifics around it really aren't there. It's more about feelings and emotions and sort of what I would need in order to feel content and secure and fulfilled by that manifestation. It really isn't about it needs to have X, Y, and Z or look like X, Y, and Z. It's more about how I want to feel. And that has been a really good strategy for me for most of my manifestations. And then the house was just a different one because I allowed myself to want something that I had never had before in a really thorough way. And I manifested it.
I think that's a really important thing to note because sometimes people get really stuck on the specific versus non-specific. How do I write it? How do I say it? You know, all of these things. And I think you're a great expander for people in that maybe most of your manifestations you identify as non-specific, and it's better for you to have general terms because you need that detachment. It's more trusting for you to have detachment and let the universe show up in a different way than a very specific sort of controlling way that you can get.
I agree with you entirely. And also approaching a list with that stress of getting it right or not knowing how to do it, I think that's actually something that needs to go through a DI, because this work really doesn't have to feel like that. It gets to feel like it has a lot more flow for you, and it gets to feel a lot more customized to you when it needs to be. So any stress around a list, I think, is kind of showing you your next thing you need to work on in a DI.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And then the cool thing is switching over, and when you were like, you know what, this feels like a specific list, I have trust that I can, you know, manifest, I can get something bigger, because every time we're putting something on a list, it's this or better. So you don't have to fear like, well, what if it didn't, you know, have all the things that I wanted? Like, it's this or better. So you're still allowing room for the universe to reward in a certain way. But putting those specific things on there, especially if you hadn't had them, and like you said, it sounded basic, but you weren't really expanded to see that you could get those things, it's almost like that was showing that you had trust in the universe, because you weren't trying to control it. You were saying, no, you know what? I actually deserve all of these things, and I'm going to list them out one by one because I know I can have them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the manifestations that I haven't been specific about, it's kind of been like, I'm not the best architect here. With the house, I was, because I had specific things that I wanted. But with the other manifestations, particularly the book, I know that I'm not like the best driver of this bus, the universe is. So I don't need to be super specific here. What I need to do is understand why I want something, why it's important to me, how I want to feel when it comes through, like what purpose do I want it to serve in my life? And once I've got that, I kind of just like let it ride, because I know it's coming and I'm really looking forward to the work that I'm going to do beforehand, because regardless of what is on my list, regardless of what I'm manifesting, the entire time I'm manifesting self-worth and deservingness, the entire time. And honestly, if that was all I had ever manifested from TBM work, I would still be doing it, because it is hands down the greatest gift I've ever given myself in a million years. Like, my life is entirely unrecognizable to me now, as opposed to before TBM work. And I mean that in the best way. It's like, I don't feel like myself. And I mean that in a good way. I feel like a new, far more authentic version of myself that I couldn't have even imagined before. I didn't know that was a possibility. So it's a very low stress process for me doing this work, because I already know I'm manifesting more self-worth every day.
Give us a like, paint a picture in our minds of like, what did that version of you look like prior to TBM work? And what does the version of that look like now?
Oh my God. The prior version was bathed in shame. Absolutely bathed in shame, bathed in lack and fear, and just clawing at life for any sort of scrap. The biggest limiting belief that I have worked on over the course of 3 years has been, you're only worth the minimum. That has been the most recurring thing that I've taken through DIs, that I've journaled about, I mean, over and over and over again. Every time I learn something new, and every time I explore different memories, every time I'm reprogramming something additional, the prior iteration of me was only worth the minimum, was terrified to say no, because whatever was in front of me in the moment, no matter how meager, I thought that that was the last thing that was ever coming for me. And I was so blocked, so absolutely blocked from receiving anything. I used to describe it as like, I was blocked on both sides. I had limiting beliefs about what I was able to receive, or what I was worth receiving or deserving of. I was completely blocked for that. And then I also had extreme guilt and shame about having anything, because I didn't think that I was worth it. I thought that I had to be overly gracious and effusively grateful for even scraps that I was receiving. So I was viewing my life as being blocked from stuff coming in. And then if I would get something nice in my life, I was sort of rejecting that because I didn't think I was worth it. And now that is so not the case. It's wild to like talk about that person out loud, because I feel so removed from that version of me. It was just an inauthentic way to live. It was a very low worth, entirely inauthentic way to live. It was so inauthentic that I didn't know who I actually was or what I was capable of doing. And now I'm far more aware of my talent and ability and strength, and I'm far kinder to things that are not my strengths. It's entirely unrecognizable. It's so wild to like talk about it out loud, because none of my friends or family do TBM, so I don't really discuss this out loud very much, but it is sort of wild to think about that person. I have not thought about her in a long time.
What do you think when, you know, you have those core wounds that come up and like you said, you were reprogramming them from so many different angles. You've gone through inner child and shadow and all of the workshops probably numerous times. When those things pop up, how do you navigate handling them? Is there a certain DI that is your favorite? Is there a certain memory that you pull up? Is there a certain workshop? What do you do when you're like, oh, I kind of feel like my inner child is needing some soothing now? Or, oh, that feeling of lack, whoa, that just popped up. I haven't felt that in a while. What's your remedy for when that stuff comes up?
Well, first of all, I get super excited when I'm triggered. I get really excited when I'm triggered and I get really excited when I'm being tested because I know something's about to come through. So I'm like, oh, what's this? This is exciting. I do DIs 5 days a week and I primarily stick to the daily practice, though a couple times a year I'll revisit key workshops. And in fact, I probably need to just go ahead and start shadow because I'm realizing it's been so long since I've done it. But whenever I'm triggered by something or I recognize that something needs work, I'm really excited because that's just giving me a roadmap. That's telling me effortlessly the next thing that I need to delve into. Most of the time I'm doing subconscious reintegration or triggered as just sort of like daily consistent DIs. I like to mix in a bit of the prosperity DI in there. Sometimes that's like my Friday treat to myself as a little prosperity DI. I also really love reinforcing within Uplevel. That's one of my all-time favorites. I love that one so much. And if I'm ever feeling like I need to do a DI before I go to bed, that I'll typically do reinforcing. But it's also not something I pre-plan. I have the time dedicated every morning and I open up TBM and I look through the list of available DIs and I just like sort of acknowledge what I'm drawn to in that moment. And I just sort of let it be very organic. I don't approach this work as like, oh, am I doing this the right way? Is this the one I should be doing? I never do that. And if it ever feels like I'm forcing something or I'm doing this out of need, or if I'm ever approaching a DI thinking in my head, okay, I have to do this DI because I want this manifestation to come through. If I ever am approaching it that way, I shut my laptop and walk away and I come back to it later. And I dig into that feeling of stress and worry and anxiety. And that's what I'll focus on instead of whatever I'm manifesting in that moment. I don't find a lot of benefit to approaching TBM work from a place of anxiety or stress. I lean into trust and letting go. And the more I'm able to do that, I just have such a better time with it. I enjoy it so much more. And obviously, like, I see manifestations come through more clearly. I see absolutely batshit synchronicities when I'm approaching it that way. I've started keeping a list of those too, because honestly, things get wild. But I sort of just listen to what I need in the moment. And I do that. And I've heard this a lot from other TBM members. There's like concern over, you know, I can't do a DI for half an hour, or I fall asleep, or it's just too much time. I don't have that in the morning. I stay down in the DI as long as I need to. And I come up whenever I want to, whenever I'm feeling like it's time. And whatever it is, it is. There's never been a reason for me to question what I'm doing, because I consistently see manifestations of various sizes. But beyond that, I consistently see my self-worth getting stronger, my ability to say no getting stronger. It's a very easy process for me, I guess.
What I just want to highlight in everything that what you're saying too is that the way you approach the work is from high self-worth. So you're in the driver's seat. I think we have this quote, you're manifesting all the time, might as well get in the driver's seat. You are in the driver's seat with this work. So I think sometimes people are like, what's the perfect protocol that's going to get me all the things? I'll follow the rules and I'll get there. It's like, you are the protocol. You have the answers. Your intuition knows what DI you want to do when. Listen to that. Obviously, you want to understand the basics and how to manifest and how the formula works. But once you're in there, you are so powerful. And the way that you are guiding it is exactly in that high self-worth. Okay, well, my intuition knows what's best for me, so I'm going to pop in here. This is how long I need the healing for. Okay, great. I got it. Let's move on to the next thing. Oh, I'm triggered. Ooh, this is really exciting. What's my roadmap? Cool. Let's look down that avenue. It's so much more powerful and empowering and liberating to know that you just need you. It's not this special secret code.
Oh, for sure. And look, I know that We want things to be magic. We want things to just work like magic. We want to follow a protocol, have a manifestation come through, and it just works like magic. TBM is magic. I won't deny that. I've experienced far too many magical moments to deny that. But there is no magic in desperation. And there is no magic in an energy that needs this. Your energy can't come from a place of, I have to do this so that this will happen, because the magic can't come through with that. It has to come from a place of calm and quiet and ease, approaching it with a level of trust, and then letting the work and the universe demonstrate that they're worth trusting. It's a really good use of your time. And you're absolutely right that we are very powerful in this work. And one of the reasons why I knew it was time to reach out to you guys about being on the podcast was because my manifestation, the biggest one I've ever had on my list, the one I'm most excited for, like it feels like an absolutely massive moment in my life and in my future. It happened because I was co-creating with the universe. It didn't come out of nowhere. It didn't just spring up in my life out of nothing. I had to build it together with the universe. And that's, I think, why it's so powerful for me, because there are wonderful things that can for sure come out of nowhere. And something did come out of nowhere for me that actually like got the wheels turning for this book. And I will tell that story because it's a good one. But
yes, please.
I do want to stress that like you really are co-creating with the universe. It's not just you sitting at home waiting for something to happen to you. That's not the energy that I approach this with. It is listening to my intuition. It's listening to the messages I'm receiving, putting things into action when it's time, and having a little bit of trust and letting go when it's time for that too.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership, because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily, in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones.
And for a limited time, we have our winter sale going on. So check the show notes if you are a new member signing up for a discount in order to join the Pathway.
Okay, now back to the episode.
So tell us about the kismet things that come through, and then let's dive into the story of the book publishing.
Okay, so before the wheels were in motion for this book, I had been trying for several years with a book agent to try to sell a book proposal and get a book deal, the whole nine yards there, and that wasn't coming through. For years, that wasn't coming through. Even doing this work, it wasn't coming through. And about a month before the book manifestation started to come through, I was approached by a publisher based in the UK, and they asked me if I wanted to be a part of an anthology. And so it was, I think, 30 women contributing essays on the topic that's in my field. And I said, of course, I would love to be included. That would be an honor. And they gave me the compensation that was involved in participating in this book. No royalties involved whatsoever. It was just a flat fee up front. And the flat fee was drastically low. And again, if it's not a hell yes, it's a no. And I'm an absolute beast at tests now, because I know the benefit to saying no. I know the benefit to staying in my worth. So it was actually really easy for me to go back to them and say, you know what? Well below my rate. Here's my rate if you'd like to pay it. If not, this isn't a fit. And thank you so much for reaching out. And they wrote back and they said, you know what, that's beyond budget for us. We can't make it work. We're so sorry. And I let it go and I went about my life. And I will tell you the story of the book in a second, but you should know that I think 4 or 5 months later, this publisher came back and said, actually, we'll pay you your rate. Would you like to be in the book? And so by spring of 2022, I will have 2 books on Amazon that I'm a part of.
I love this, A, because just to give sort of, and not to give specific numbers, but just to give a spectrum here, the initial price point that they had offered you and then what your rate was, I mean, it was significantly different. We're talking like totally different ballparks. We're not saying like they upped it a couple hundred dollars. It was a significant jump.
I'm comfortable giving the numbers if you are, because if I can be expansive, I'd love to be expansive.
I think specifics are so helpful, so go for it.
No problem. I'm a freelance writer and numbers are so hidden and so shrouded. And I don't see the point in that because we can expand each other a lot more. So the initial rate was like $250. And my rate for a project like this, where I wasn't going to retain any royalties from the book, was going to be $1 a word. And they wanted a 1,500 word essay. So that's $1,500. And so that's what I ended up making for the essay in the end.
I think that is so powerful because not only were you comfortable saying no to this opportunity, which seems sort of like a dangly carrot because you want to be a published author. That was something that was very important and that was on your list. And this is sort of like a bridge to having your own book, and it would make you a published author being in this book. So it's sort of dangling your desire in front of you, but it's like you can have it, but you have to be able to settle for way less than you're comfortable being paid and what your rate is and what your worth is. And for you to say no to that and for them to come back and say, okay, fine, we'll meet you there and at the exact rate you want, you can't make this shit up.
You really can't. And let me tell you something, I love nothing more than a shiny carrot. Give me a shiny carrot and let me say no to it. I cannot wait because I love passing tests. I see so much movement in saying no to something that is settling. I love saying no to settling. I have seen so much good come from that all the time, like in so many areas of life. There used to be so much fear around it. And I know people have fear around saying no. And sometimes I still do. There are still difficult tests that come my way. But like, there is such a benefit to you in doing it the first time, because the first time you say no to something that is settling, whatever settling means to you, the first time you do that and you see that the world doesn't end, you expand yourself and you give yourself so much more confidence and so much more trust, and you can build on that over time. And that's another reason why I wanted to talk to you, is that this manifestation took 3 years, and I wanted to kind of sing the praises of patience and let everybody know that it's okay if things take time. It's okay if something wonderful takes time. I don't know if people are familiar with the video that accompanies the reinforcing DI in Uplevel, but it talks about strengthening your nervous system to hold a much bigger cup. I couldn't have held a cup this big in 2019. I couldn't have done it. It wasn't time yet, but it is now.
What do you think the biggest shift from 2019 calling this in to now calling this in? What are just some of the key parts of your cup that you needed to expand in?
I had to stop feeling like rejection was crushing. I needed to stop feeling like rejection was telling me that I wasn't enough, or that I was bad, or I wasn't a good writer, which is nonsense. I'm a phenomenal writer. I had to learn what rejection really is. And I am a Cancer sun, and I've always felt that I move a bit slowly as such, but that's okay. I had to learn that rejection is not only protection, but it's also redirection, because it took, God, how many rejections did I get over the course of like 3 years? Probably around between 30 and 40 rejections from publishers. I don't know if I just wasn't hearing the message or if it just wasn't time for it to sink in. The message was, self-publish this book, because that's going to be a far better manifestation than you understand right now, because you will keep more of the royalties money. You will retain the television and movie rights. This will be completely within your creative control, not a publisher's control. It is so much better for you individually, Shani, to not publish with a publisher. It took a long time to hear it. But when I heard it and I said yes to it, everything moved really quickly.
What shifted for you to be able to hear that?
I think years of this work and passing tests and seeing the outcome of passing tests, seeing the outcome of failing tests, getting further and further expanded by people that I really admire and look up to, and time. Honestly, time. It took me some time. And I would have had a lot of shame about that in the past, but I don't anymore. The thing that really changed was that very last rejection that came through. It was the very last one from the last publisher I was waiting for. And it came through, and that was the first rejection that I had ever received that was funny. Because it was like, I'm an author. That's my future. I know I'm going to publish books. The idea of not being an author and writing a book and publishing a book was comical to me because I knew it was mine. I knew it was what I was going to do. And this publisher not wanting me was never going to tell me who I was. It was just a completely ridiculous thought to think that I would never write a book. That was asinine. And it took that last rejection. Maybe that was it because it was the last one that I was waiting for. It was like the final no. And that final no was hysterical. Like, you have to be kidding. Obviously, I'm writing a book. Okay, so not writing a book with a publisher. How are we doing this?
That exact sentiment of what you just said is deservingness. When people are like, what does that feel like? What does that look like? That is it. That feeling of, I don't care what is coming at me. I have complete conviction of who I am. It is unshakable. I can get this rejection. It just means I'm finding a different path there, but it is not changing my sense of self and my identity and how I'm perceiving myself. I'm no longer influenced by the outside.
100%. 100%.
And right after, you spoke with a friend who suggested a potential company to collaborate with to self-publish.
Yeah, when that rejection came through, I happened to be standing in the Met Museum in New York. And it was like the first time I had left my house, the whole pandemic. I was double masked and petrified. And I was in one of the paintings rooms alone. And I, for some reason, got a ping to check my email. I checked my email. I got rejected. And I was standing there in this room with the most gorgeous art on the planet. I took a picture of the room and I wrote this caption about how I've grown through rejection and learned what it really means and like how this would have been crushing, but now it's not. And, you know, if you're struggling with rejection, it isn't what we think it is. It really isn't. It is, rejection is far more protective than we allow ourselves to acknowledge. And a friend of mine that I know through the podcasting world commented on that Instagram post and he said, we need to talk. And we did. And he let me know of a company that, the easiest way to explain it is, you know how we are, it's a good idea for us to delegate and detox the things that aren't like authentic to us. This company allowed me to delegate and detox everything that was blocking me from self-publishing a book. The easiest way to explain it is like typically a publisher would give you like a big shiny advance and pay you to write a book and then they would publish it for you. And then you have to pay them back that advance through book sales. And many authors never do. So many authors never make another penny after that advance. With the company that I worked with, I paid them a lump sum of money, significant lump sum of money from my fuck you fund, by the way, to them. And then they make the book, they get it on Amazon, they handle all the bells and whistles, editing, cover design, layout, proofreading, setting up all your accounts, all of that. They handle everything. So all I had to do was write it. All I had to do was create this book. And things just started to move very, very quickly after I decided that I was worth that investment in myself. Things moved very, very quickly. And it's been a wild and beautiful and challenging and surreal process ever since.
I keep coming back to this idea of like, you know, when you first wrote this on your list, not being able to hold the manifestation. And that's how you can kind of surrender to the timing of it. Because I think sometimes when we have manifestations on our list that we know we are not expanded enough to hold or unblocked enough to hold, we know that it feels like a little far out. There's something about it when we're like, I know this is going to happen, but things have to clear out of the way until I really see it connecting. Do you feel, looking back retroactively, when you initially put that on your list, did you have an awareness of, okay, I can see it happening, but I feel like I'm a little bit distant from it? Like, what did it feel like then compared to how you feel now with it coming through?
I always knew it was going to come through. I just didn't know when, and I was getting impatient. And I had a lot of impatience throughout that process. I knew it was coming through. I always had an immense amount of trust with this work. I think there's just something about TBM that has clicked very well for me. So I've always had the ability to trust, but moments of impatience have absolutely arisen. I waited 3 years for this. I mean, come on. But the thing that helped in moments of great impatience are what I like to call universal encouragement. I don't know if this is like a TBM concept or whatever, but I just got little moments of encouragement along the way, letting me know that this was coming and to chill out. There would be days in the periods of working really, really hard with my agent on a book proposal or waiting to hear back from publishers, right in the thick of that, I would like open Twitter, and I'm not kidding, like anytime I would go on Twitter, anytime I would go on Instagram, somebody was getting a goddamn book deal. Every single time. There's a lot to learn in your jealousy. There's a lot to learn. And when you can translate jealousy into expansion, things start to move. Things absolutely start to move. Jessica, 2 days before you emailed me, I was listening to a process episode with a published author who got a book deal. Like, and I was like, I have to listen to this. I have to listen to this because there is so much to learn from our own jealousy. And you release your fears of jealousy too when you just sort of dive in and explore what's there for you, explore what's actually triggering you, if anything. Maybe it's just expanding you. There's so much to learn. So I've had so many moments where it's been absolutely comical. The number of people in my sphere getting book deals and publishing books. I'm like, this is hilarious. Like, really? Okay. So I'm able to chill out and have some patience and just sort of trust that everything is going to come through for me when it needs to. And I've never been upset at the universe's timeline for me since I started this work. I've never been like, really, universe, you couldn't have given that to me a year ago. No, I've always been like, no, you were right. I wasn't ready a year ago, or X, Y, and Z was happening a year ago. And I'm so much more equipped and prepared now than I was back then. I've had so many moments of encouragement and so many moments of expansion throughout the whole process. So anytime it's been difficult or I felt impatient, I just kind of opened my eyes and let that show up.
What parts of the work and what sort of things do you turn to when you feel that impatience show up, or you feel a dog paddling energy or a desperation energy come through? Like, how do you self-soothe that dynamic?
There was a time when I was feeling really impatient and I was doing 2 DIs a day because I thought that that would make things move faster. And after about a week of that, I was like, what are you even doing? I had too closely aligned doing DIs with manifesting. That's not the way to approach this at all. It's like I wasn't even really absorbing the reprogramming work that I was doing because I was more focused on just getting it done and checking things off a list, and that wasn't working. So I recognize when I need to take a break, when I'm too closely aligning doing TBM work with actually manifestations coming through. There's always a limiting belief there. There's always some limiting belief at the root of my impatience, at the root of my anxiety, at the root of jealousy, at the root of feeling like I'm not enough for what this is. That's been difficult to pinpoint sometimes because the only area of my life where I've never felt small, I've never felt low self-worth, I've never felt not enough was my writing talent. I've always known, even in the darkest pits of zero self-worth whatsoever, I've always known I'm a great fucking writer. Always. And so that's been the more subtle lessons to learn have been, I know I'm a great writer. I know I'm doing great work. I know I'm helping people. So why isn't this coming through? Like, what's still there? What do I still need to dig into? And for me, it was kind of about, I was attaching success and I was attaching accomplishment and even maybe manifestation with the way that I thought it needed to happen, because I was still prioritizing what other people thought and I was still prioritizing other people's ideas of achievement and success and accolades, and I was ignoring what was on the list, which was how I wanted to feel and why I wanted this manifestation in the first place. And when I got back to why do you want to be an author in the first place, then things started to move forward a lot faster.
Talk a little bit about, and you wrote this in your submission too, about having a book deal to be valid to other people, but it was like your soul's work of creating the book to be valid to yourself. How did you reframe that need for outside validity and turn the camera, so to speak, inward?
I kind of expanded myself in that way. A lot of my work centers around not needing a relationship to validate you as a person, as a completely fully formed adult, that sort of thing, and recognizing that you already are and you're not lacking or missing anything if you don't have a partner right now. And I sort of translated that into, why do you need a publisher to validate you? Why do you need something that the world easily understands as successful? Why can't you define success for yourself? That was a really big reframe, I think. It was really helpful to reframe how I wanted to publish a book once I understood more of the mechanics of it. Once I understood that a self-published author retains a lot more money per book sale, things started to become rapidly clearer. Once I started understanding the self-publish benefits, they felt more like me. They felt more like what I would want from publishing a book in the first place. And I didn't know that that's how it worked. I wasn't informed enough. And once I started getting that information, it was massively expansive. And I was like, oh, you're saying that I'm in charge, not a publisher and not an editor. I can't stand being edited. It's like sandpaper on my skin when someone changes my words. Like, get out of here. Absolutely not. I always needed to be at the creative helm of my book, always. I was being so protected. Every single one of those rejections was not someone saying, you're not worth writing a book, Shani. Every one of those rejections was me dodging a bullet. Every single one. And understanding that over time, looking at them in hindsight, I was able to see that. And now things are flowing with so much more ease and so much more excitement. I don't approach this with any sort of you're only worth the minimum, ask for the minimum, expect the minimum. There's none of that here. That has never come into this. It took a lot of basics, expansion, unblocking, passing tests. It really took a lot of the core basics kind of tailored to how things work well for me.
I think it's such a testament of surrender and the work and the dedication, like the fact that you were showing up, the fact that you were, if you need to take time away, you were taking time away, but you were coming back to the work and you were showing up for yourself. Most importantly, over any manifestation that came through, it's growing this relationship, dynamic, trust with yourself. You had written as well, the TBM work is so much more than just the things that we manifest, and that it's really about like a whole life shift. You've healed so much trauma and reframed so many limiting beliefs. What do you think is your tip for anyone who is beginning this process or feeling disgruntled along the process or at the very beginning and just starting to unpack a situation where they feel really low self-worth in?
I think patience. I really do believe in a bit of patience here. This is so exciting, right? When you discover TBM's work, it's so exciting because you're like, I can do this and I can manifest the things I want. What? Are you insane? Okay. And then that gets really exciting and you start to understand and you start to read other people's stories and what other people manifested and you start to understand that this is really something that is possible and your life can start to feel really good. And for me, my life hadn't felt good in a really long time, if ever. And so there was a lot of excitement in the beginning because I was like, wait a second, you're saying that everything can get better. That's really exciting. So there is this urge to want to like drink from a fire hose, kind of. So I would encourage patience and breathing. And if you can, if you're able to, and I don't know if this is like totally counterintuitive to TBM work, but trying to detach the work that you're doing and the limiting beliefs that you're reprogramming, trying to detach them from the actual thing you're calling in, let go of that thing that you're calling in because it's coming. It's on your list. It's what you want. You're worth it. You deserve it. It's coming. You can let that stress go because you're not in charge of that anymore. What you're in charge of are your limiting beliefs and reprogramming and expanding and listening to pings and sort of hearing more of what the universe has been trying to tell you. I think that's probably my best advice.
Ooh, love that. Love that. Love that. It really all comes down to raising your own self-worth and peeling back all of those layers so you can see yourself so fully and so clearly in a way that you haven't been programmed to. And once that's in flow, oh, whatever you want, it's yours. It's happening. That's already done. And then, so going full circle back, you said that one of the first things that you heard Lacey talk about was, what do you have in your life that's not serving you? Deleting dating apps. Explain to people who don't know how that led to basically your expertise and your book and all of that and how it became so full circle.
Sure. So I have been single for 13 years now, and for almost 14 years, my goodness. And for 10 years of that singlehood, I was on and off dating apps the entire time. So a full decade of using dating apps without even one relationship resulting from them. So all that was happening was a massive amount of disappointment, a massive amount of all the charming little micro traumas we absorb from dating apps. I was spending a lot of money on dating apps and seeing no results from that. It was an act of desperation in itself because I saw singlehood as something so wrong and so shameful as just a given. It was just assumed in my mind that if I'm single, that means I'm lacking a partner. I didn't know there was any other way to think about singlehood. So if I'm single, I don't have a partner and I have to date until I find one. It was almost like a chore, no different than doing laundry. I just assumed I had to be searching for someone. And in 10 years of aggressive searching, I never had found anyone. And a few years before I found Lacey's work, I was like in the shower washing my hair, and this thought that I now know is a ping, but back then I didn't know what it was because it felt like it was placed in my head, not by me. It was, this is all for a reason. Everything that you are going through right now, everything that's happening to you, all of this shit that is coming at you, it's all for a reason. It's not for nothing. And that was true because my book is entirely about reframing singlehood and banishing these negative narratives that are preventing single women from living full, valid, beautiful lives. But when I started Lacey's work and I deleted my dating apps, it was because she asked in that video, what's in your life that's not serving you? And there was only one thing. I mean, there were a million, but the biggest one, the glaring one, was dating apps. They were such a big part of my life. I was spending God knows how much time swiping. I was paying them money. I was enduring just the hell of it. And people who are listening who are in it right now know what it is. I don't have to go into that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I deleted them because I had never asked myself, how are dating apps serving you? And I had never allowed myself to say, they're not. Because I was so scared that if I delete my dating apps, I'll never meet someone. And I had never asked myself two things. One, have you met someone yet? No? Okay. So like, why are you still doing dating apps? And then also I had completely never even asked myself like why I wanted to meet someone, why that was the center of me, why I felt so lacking. I just never even examined it. After I deleted my dating apps, I was free to fully examine my singlehood, to fully look at what does single life really look like? What's good about this? What's bad about this? How can we see things from different perspectives? So that was January of 2019. By April of 2019, my podcast on this topic had launched. And ever since, I have been reframing singlehood. For anyone listening that is like unclear about what that means in this context, the easiest example I always give to everybody who's single is if you have a thought in your head that you're thinking, I hate sleeping alone. If you've ever had that thought in your head or anything like it, the reframe of I hate sleeping alone is I get the whole bed. The same thing is happening in both scenarios. It's just that in one, you have a very different mindset than the other. So that's what my work centers around. And I took all of that time and all of that energy that I was giving to dating apps that weren't serving me, and I put it into a podcast that has served me so well since, because I have this wonderful community, and they're a huge part of why I was able to write this book. I mean, it's unfathomable to even talk about it out loud. I deleted all my dating apps, and now I have a career beyond my imagination. It's wild.
It's so beautiful too, because it seems like your work is really pulling back all the limiting beliefs around being single, defining being single, and really reframing it to such an empowering, badass, amazing thing, which is really powerful and very in tandem with raising your high self-worth.
Thank you. And I also want to make it clear that like in changing the narrative around being single, I'm also not anti-relationship. I've had a partner on my list too. Still do.
Ooh.
And I, you know what I mean? I've never thought that speaking to myself and to others about singlehood in a way that's more valid, that's more positive, that's more full of self-worth. I've never thought that any of that precludes any of us from finding partnership in the future, ever. We have a false notion in our minds. We have to choose singlehood or choose aggressive searching for a partner. You don't. you can stop the aggressive searching and still meet someone. Those two things are not related. But yeah, it's I do like to be really clear that my work absolutely is about enjoying singlehood, and it's about single women being happy in their singlehood, not choosing singlehood. There's a really big difference there, because I think we block ourselves when we think we have to choose either dating and trying to find someone, or this like false commitment to singlehood that we don't even want. You never have to do that. You can have whatever you want. I just also think we would have a much easier time and flow a lot better if we could enjoy and appreciate and value this single time in our life, because we're really free. We are really, really free, and we don't have to compromise ever. And I just think we should enjoy it, because relationships will come. It's on your list. You want it. You deserve it. It's coming. Let it go. It's coming. So in the meantime, enjoy.
Oh, I love that. I love that added piece too, because it's really this balance of surrender in whatever phase or period that you're in, and removing any shame that says you need to be anywhere else than where you exactly are.
Absolutely. And you can expand yourself too in that capacity. Like if you're having trouble trusting that whatever season you're in right now is the right one for you, look back through your Rolodex of everyone you've dated and ask yourself if that's really the partner that you would want to be with for the long haul. I have never dated someone that I would want to marry, ever. And I find so much self-expansion in that. I find so much trust in that. And it helps me let go more. It helps me let go more and look forward to the future in a way that before TBM work, I had never looked forward to the future. I used to always think of the future as, oh God, I don't know what's coming for me, with like terror in my head, in my heart. I used to be so afraid of the future. And now I think about the future like, I'm so excited for what's coming for me. And that is a massive, massive gift that I have given myself. And this work is how I was able to do that. It's so important to think of your future in a positive way, in a way that has a sense of like calmness and ease and looking forward to it. Looking forward to the future shouldn't be so hard, but I think that in our world it is. So it's a great gift that you give yourself when you're able to learn how to let go and be excited for the future, look forward to it instead of fearing it.
Okay, and I have to ask, for anyone who is in a single chapter of their life right now, what is one tip or piece of advice that you would offer them?
I mean, I'll just go for it. I think you should delete your dating app. I think it would be inauthentic if I said anything else, because it's the thing that has helped me the most in the single space. I think dating apps have us looking at life through a pinhole and thinking that the only possible path to love is a dating app. And once you remove them from your life, you widen the aperture through which you can look at life and see so much more possibility and so much more room to enjoy and to be alive. And I think that dating apps are just narrowing us too much. I found a great gift in deleting them, and I would only suggest this if you're having a tough time with dating apps. If you're loving dating apps, keep going. Have a great time. But if you are not enjoying dating apps, you don't have to use them. You get to live a life free of that burden, if that's what it feels like to you, and you get to meet someone anyway.
We get a lot of people that write in saying, you know, oh, I feel like I should be on the apps, but I just feel like I'm going to meet my person organically and in the flesh and just by through a friend or something. Do I have to get on the apps? And we're like, no, listen to your pings. They will guide you. Like, listen to your pings. If it doesn't feel good, then it's a no. If it's not a hell yes, it's a no.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much. This was so expansive, and I'm sure everyone's going to be running out to buy your book. And it's just been such a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
All right. We'll see you next week, everyone. Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is the Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. when you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, the motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.